Manning on a play fake, rolls right, throws for Ingram. He's got it at the five. He reaches for the pylon. Touchdown, Giants. What a job by Ingram as he extended the football out as he was about to get hit.
David. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Ooh, it's getting closer and closer, believe it or not. In less than a month now, you will have actual pro football to watch. Okay, it's not actual because it's not regular season, but it's on the way. There's going to be a Hall of Fame game kicked off, like I say, in fewer than 4 weeks now. Your eyes are going to be looking at actual football guys doing it. And there you just heard in the red, white, and blue, number 88, Evan Ingram. Speaking of red, white, and blue, hope you had a happy July 4th. I encourage you, Nate Demand, you go back and listen to our swell podcast that we've been doing over the last couple weeks here. Jake Olson, a real inspiration of a guy, lost his sight at the age of 12. Nevertheless, with the help of Pete Carroll and the USC program, is got to go out onto a football field and play long snapper in a college football game for the legendary USC football program. Plus that, a swell fella. So go back and listen to that. And then also we just talked with Steve Byrne, great comedian, filmmaker, and a lover of black and gold sports. So we got along famously, as you would imagine. Go back and listen to those. In the off season, people say it. Well, I'm the one who says it. But primarily, but I think that the DDFP in the offseason is strong, and we've been doing a lot of long form interviews. We did another one with Ross Tucker recently. When we spend 45 minutes, or it's never 45 minutes, more like an hour 15 with these guys, they always go swimmingly. It's always fun to get to know some of these guys. So anyhow, go back and listen to all those. Meantime, Eddie Spaghetti, a turbulent time for you, the New York City guy. Rangers up, Knicks way down. Where do you come down with football nigh? Evan Ingram, I keep saying it, he can be the X factor for that team. Odell being gone does not have to spell doom and gloom for your Giants in what is a fascinating, really, it always is interesting. It always gets a lot of primetime run because of the Cowboys' largesse and the Giants and the Eagles' run of success here. There are a lot of reasons why you see them in primetime. But I think in 2019, wow, it's a fascinating Carson Wentz with all that money trying to get back I don't want to overstate it and make it into a melodrama, but Nick Foles moving on, it's not a small matter. I would think in that locker room, no one's going to come out and say, yeah, you know, Nick Foles, he's the guy who came through in the clutch, but that's going to be an interesting story on a loaded Eagles team. Then the Cowboys, I feel like people are a little weirdly skeptical of Dak like we talk about, but the thing that we also keep saying is Kellen Moore is an upgrade. I know he's a little bit of an unknown versus Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan, but I think he is going to be an upgrade and provide a legitimate 21st century offense for Dak. And when you throw Zeke into there and that offensive line and upgraded pass catchers, and that defense should be really good. And then your guys, the Giants, and I think the Skins are a little undervalued right now. They were really good until the injuries just decimated them in 2018. Even they can be a factor this year. And I think Montez Sweat, by the way, and Dwayne Haskins are two guys who fell a little bit too far, and the Redskins will benefit from that. Anywho, where's your confidence level in your gents here in July?
In terms of confidence of making a playoff push? Or
yeah.
It's mediocre. The one thing, the teams I think are clearly ahead of them, well, one being the Eagles. I think the Eagles have to have something go drastically wrong for them to not be the top team. Like, they are a loaded team. I always believe in Wentz. I think he's talented despite you kind of hinted at it, but the locker room issues. There was that report months ago about some Eagles players didn't really love him and thought he was too much into himself, which people that came out and disputed it, but I think that story was written for a reason.
I just got to say, and we say it all the time, if that kind of stuff happens in Denver, I don't know, it a little brush fire stays a little brush fire. Mm-hmm. Not in Philadelphia.
Right.
If there's any evidence of that, the local media will seize on that. If there's any discord, they'll seize on that and they'll blow it up into an inferno to the detriment of the Eagles. I think that's the thing that I'm not trying to be, like I say, trying to TMZ this, but that kind of is how it feels to me, that there's I could see it getting sideways.
Yeah, that, I mean, that could be their downfall, or if his back is a career-long nagging thing, which could obviously change stuff. But I think the Eagles are clearly above every other team. The Cowboys getting Amari Cooper and then getting Travis Frederick back healthy as a huge upgrade, and that's the one big thing they have over the Giants is, like, you know your quarterback is Dak. Dak now has Cooper as a weapon. He now has, Ezekiel Elliott's as good as they get, whereas the Giants, the main position, the most important position, is still a question mark because you don't know if you're going to go with Eli. You don't know if you're going to go with Daniel Jones. It's 95% going to be Eli, but we all know Eli is not capable of probably another Super Bowl run in him. He just does not have the arm anymore, doesn't have the mobility, despite the Giants' O-line being improved and adding a couple nice additions like Golden Tate, and their defense should be a lot better than it was last year. So, I mean, I think they are a better team than the Redskins. I don't know if I really love rookie Haskins playing right away, or whoever's playing quarterback for them. I think they still
have to
hold. What
are you, a 63-year-old man? How many more examples of guys stepping in day one and doing well do you need before you're going to sign off on starting a rookie quarterback?
I mean, there's been plenty of examples of guys sitting and being fine too.
There are not plenty of examples.
Who would Haskins throw to? I mean, if like a healthy Jordan Reed to possibly, like, I don't know. I don't really love.
Well, what
roster.
I like, what I like is that is that they have that they should have a nice offensive line.
Trent Williams stays, sure.
Right. They should be okay there. And then they have Darius Geis and Adrian
Geis
Peterson.
Geis coming back from the ACL. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's true. I did forget about him. If he's healthy, that definitely helps out. But I still think that they'll be close to the Giants. I think the Giants are a tad better. But I think, could the Giants go 8-8? Yeah, I think so.
If in fact that's how the Giants feel about it, then they should definitely go with Daniel Jones. If they can sit down reasonably and with their brains instead of with their hearts and say, all right, are we winning the Super Bowl this year? Then why are we not going to put the kid in there and get him the reps?
No,
unlike baseball pitchers, because that's a thing that you always hear about baseball, and you hear it about goalies too, young goalies in the NHL. You always hear, yeah, but if they get too much adversity, if they feel that they're not up to it, it'll shatter their confidence forever. Their psyche will be destroyed. That doesn't seem to be, I don't know if that's true. As a matter of fact, it'd be fun to talk to a sports psychologist to see if there's any merit to that based on examples that can be provided. But I'm trying to think, is a guy ever like, yeah, he started out bad and then he just couldn't get right mentally?
I agree in the sense that Daniel Jones's ceiling right now going forward is always going to be higher than Eli's because Eli's on the way down. And I think I said this on the pod we did with Nick Costas and Will Brinson, is that a sneaky part of the Giants team I like a lot is the offensive line. I think that Solder and
That's
Will
right.
Hernandez on the left side are going to be great. I remember watching a Baldy's breakdown. He was like, Will Hernandez, if he plays like this, will be a perennial Pro Bowler for the rest of his career. They have Jalapio back. They signed Kevin Zeiler. They got him in the trade, rather. I think he's going to be awesome. And they have Mike Remmers back to his natural position, right tackle. That changes a lot of the Giants' offense because now Saquon has actual blockers. Whoever the quarterback is will have time. And there's a couple of pieces. I think Joel Preppers takes the next step up. I think Dexter Lawrence, people have not talked about Dexter Lawrence at all because
you're right about
because
that.
They drafted Jones and then DeAndre Baker was like the first corner.
I know
taken
people
off.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder where DeAndre Baker's concerned,
sure.
But the people who believe in him think he will
He's
make an impact.
Awesome, yeah. But no one's really talking about Dexter Lawrence, who is the anchor of the best defensive line in college football we've probably seen in since the Miami teams in the early 2000s. He's awesome. He's a load. He's going to do a lot for them. And they signed pieces like Marcus Golden, who could rush the passer, and I think James Betcher has a really good system in. So there are a lot of good bright spots, and I think the one thing that could really hold them back is if they do play Eli and he's mediocre for the first 4 to 6 games.
It's funny because it's hard to reconcile on some level that Tom Brady and Drew Brees and these super high-end guys, but they're so good at what they do that they sort of don't. It's almost funny when you think about with what's gone on the last couple of years in the NFL with the emergence of the RPO and the run pass, the variations of trying to spread teams out and to try and create pressure with your quarterback and some play action or running at the edge when you have an effective runner there. Why wouldn't you go with Daniel Jones? But it's funny, though, my point with Brady and Brees, they don't do any of that stuff, and yet they succeed anyway.
Well, because Brady is probably the best of all time at moving in the pocket, and then Brees is known for being one of the better deep ball throws. He still has, even if he lost some of his arm, he still has has a better arm than Eli. He could hit the sidelines. Eli now is throwing within the numbers.
I don't know if that's true about Drew Brees.
Maybe that's not this year, but Eli hasn't had his arm in how many years? 2-3 seasons. Whereas Brees, at least in the early part of last season, was still hitting deep balls.
I hear you. So, but the examples that I just cited, Daniel Jones can do some of that for
you. He can move
and
he can throw.
He's a dangerous runner.
Sure.
Yeah. Use him for that. That's what the young guys. He's not going to be a runner when he's 32, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't deploy him as his best player in his rookie season. I really could see that being a good offense in 2019, believe it or not, if they go with Daniel Jones. Anyhow, let's get to it now, shall we, Spaghetti? Want to dial up 88 here?
I'd love to.
Here he comes, everybody. One of our favorites. We really enjoyed yapping with him after the 2018 season. Now let's yap with him after the 2019 draft and in front of training camp. Here he is, everybody, Evan Ingram. All right, here he is, everybody, a guy who we really enjoyed kibitzing with a few months ago. It was before the 2019 NFL draft. It was before the final season of Game of Thrones. It was before Saquon Barkley emerged as a self-appointed master of Connect Four. So we have a lot to catch up with one of the guys who, or not one of the guys, the guy I have called the X Factor of not just the New York Giants in 2019, but perhaps even all the NFC East. If this guy shines the way I expect he will, I think the Giants have brighter days ahead than a lot of people are forecasting. It's Evan Ingram. What's happening, fella?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Well, I'm fine, and I hope the offseason's treating you well. Have you lifted any weights in the offseason?
Just a couple.
Good.
You know, not as heavy as I've seen you, but I'm working my way up, getting there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, yeah, it's I think that's a good thing to do for a football player. You know, take that or leave it. Do what you want to do. But I think that's a good idea to be doing that. So, like I say, we have a lot to kibitz about. So take me back to draft night. Did you have any idea what was coming down the pike? Did you expect the name Daniel Jones to be called out there?
I had no idea who we were going to draft. They don't tell us anything when we find out. When you guys find out is when we find out. I kind of suspected it. I knew we liked Daniel, and me and Daniel have the same agent, so I've kind of got a little inside scoop here and there. But I was excited. A lot of people were definitely had another emotion towards it. But I've seen some clips of his film and. I got to meet him last year when we did, and we threw at Duke with Eli. So I was excited, and we added Dexter Lawrence and DeAndre Baker too. So three good draft picks. I was excited for, and those guys got to work immediately, and they look good.
Yeah, it does seem like that people have completely ignored. Maybe it takes the pressure off of those two defensive players that all the heat is being pushed on to the kid. I do feel a little bad for him. That's an emotion I have. Listen, I can't feel that bad for a guy who now is a member of the New York Giants and at some point is going to get to be the starting QB. But I feel bad for all the booing and all that jazz. How does that hit you?
It's definitely a little aggravating. It's just a New York fan base. Our fans are real passionate, and that's one thing I always said, that they're real honest about the way they feel. It's whatever. I think once everybody gets to see this kid play and see the way he approaches the game, and when he finally gets his shot, a lot of people are gonna be surprised, and I think there's gonna be a lot of U-turns on the opinions and support for Daniel.
Well, you've gotten a little exposure to him firsthand, or both hands catching those passes so far. What's your reaction to? Just basically, first of all, physically, what do you think of the arm?
The dude has a really live arm. It's dynamic. He can put some touch on some throws where need be, and he can fire it in there. Just from what I've seen, I've seen him show up each and every day and just find ways to get better. And I've seen him make some crazy throws. Obviously, there's some rookie mistakes in there, and that's kind of the biggest thing I'm excited about is he's a really good at responding. He can have a couple bad throws. He knows it. He'll get back. He'll get his reps back, and make up for it. So he's definitely been looking good. I love the way he works and the way he approaches the game, and I'm excited for him.
Do you guys, do you at lunch or otherwise, do you and the other receiver sit around and sort of keep tabs on the horse race? It's got to be a weird spot, but not one that is a rarity in college or in the NFL, a QB battle or a position battle. Do you guys sit around and talk about those guys like, wow, Eli looks better today than Daniel? Or this morning, Daniel really was out throwing Eli. Do you have those kind of back and forths?
I mean, we don't compare them like that. I definitely see both guys just doing what they do each and every day, just naturally. They just show up to work and compete, and they're making each other better. I know 100% Eli is going to make Daniel a better player, and I think Daniel's going to make Eli a better player this year. So they're definitely pushing each other, and it's definitely cool to see. Both of those guys work together and get their reps and go about their practice.
Most everybody has nice things. Anybody who is on the team with Eli has nice things to say about Eli, and I suspect a lot of that has to do with the fact that unlike a lot of other guys who've won Super Bowls, who've had big playoff runs and otherwise, he seems, at least from the outside, like he is not like, what's this guy here to trying to take my job? It seems like he's encouraging. Is that, in fact, the reality?
Yeah. There's definitely no ill will between those two. From what I've seen, Eli is taking every advantage he can of helping Daniel become better each and every day. And that's just who Eli is. I mean, he's just a really, really good professional. He's been doing this for a long time, had many quarterbacks come through the rooms with him, and I don't think he's treating us any different. Just doing what he can for the team and doing what he can to make his teammates better.
It's interesting to me that one of the big exceptions to what I just said about everybody being supportive of him is it feels like, at least, that Odell is taking passive-aggressive shots at Eli, or maybe they're even just outright aggressive, except he doesn't name names and everything. How does that hit you a couple few months after Odell's made the move out to Ohio?
I've definitely seen him, and Odell is definitely a guy that'll speak his mind, and he's definitely in a different place and a new start. So he's getting a lot of questions, but we're focused on us. We've got a lot of work to do. We've been getting so much better each and every day, and we're kind of just zeroed in on getting camp going and getting this new opportunity to have a clean slate this year. And win some more games.
Man, I know I've said this to you at least three times, but I'm going to say it for at least a fourth now. I really feel like Odell goes out, it's so grim, the Giants are doomed in the passing game without Odell. And the guy, I mean, I know there's Sterling Shepard. I know that Golden Tate's there now, and there's some pass catchers. But I really feel like if Evan Engram is out on the field, that's the difference for the Giants offensively this year. How say you?
I'm just taking it day by day. I've gotten in situations throughout my career playing football where I might get a little bit too excited and get ahead of myself and kind of think far ahead, way farther than I am. And so right now I'm just taking it day by day, just working, trying to find ways to improve and excited for the camp to begin. We have so many great playmakers that are going to make everybody better. And I'm just excited to get the pass back on and get in a lot of action and get the ball back in my hands and just make some plays for my team.
Evan Engram, listen, wait, yeah, I don't know if you recall, but we have a strict no jive policy here in Studio 66. And even though you're on the phone, it still abides here. You're excited to get the pads on and go to training camp? Do you have to have a roommate? I forget if the Giants are one of the teams that requires that you sleep in a dorm with another grown-up.
Yeah, no. Yeah, my rookie year I had a roommate. Last year I didn't. So they move guys around a lot. So let's pray that I get a room by myself again, because I'm not gonna lie, that was nice.
Yeah, that's gotta be the worst. Will you watch Hard Knocks? Will the Giants gather around and watch what's going on out in Oakland this August?
I don't know if we'll have any watch parties, but I get probably about 30 minutes in my phone before I go to bed during camp, so I might open the HBO and watch a little bit.
Oh, that's got to be good. See, that'll be a nice distraction, and I think also abiding again by the no jive policy, Are you a little relieved by what that no matter what happens with the 2019 New York Giants, that at least the New York Knicks have taken a lot of the heat for you guys? No matter how bad it could be, it can't be as bad as what's going on in MSG this season, right?
Yeah. I know a little bit what those guys are going through. So, you know, we're here for them, I think in the long run they're going to be okay.
But, you know, it occurs to me as we talk about Eli, I've never put two and two together on this. Have you ever recognized that that you wore basically the exact same uniform at Ole Miss as you wear now as a Giant? Is that good? Is that consistent for you that you like that? Or is it like, man, I'd like to wear some green or some yellow at some point?
You know, I'm not going to lie. When I was throughout the draft process, I was like, you know, it's going to be cool to wear some different colors. I was trying to picture myself in a lot of different colors, different colorways, new unis. Now I'm right back where I was in the red and blue. So, you know, I don't mind it. I definitely was excited about wearing some crazy new colors. But, you know, I do like the traditional red and blue that we rock as the Giants.
Yeah, they're nice. It's just, you know, and by the way, where do you rank as a man of fashion? Where do you rank what the Giants wear compared to the rest of the NFC East? You got everybody loves that star with the Cowboys. I think those uniforms are a little overrated. How say you top to bottom in the division?
Yeah, I'll put us at the top spot. I mean, just my favorite is the white with the white on red and we're on the road with the gray pants. I don't think anybody has us beat in our road uniform.
How about that, Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass? Evan Ingram and I park our cars in the same garage. That's exactly what I say. I think you have the best road uniforms in all of pro football right now. That's a keen eye you have, and it's a retro classic. Yeah. Well, it also looks very much like we already said, like the Ole Miss getups. Now, what about, so you're going into year three, a lot of people, not just me now, on the bandwagon for Evan Ingram, breakout year, and so on and so forth. But then you got the sophomore running back, Saquon, and he's apparently a two-sport athlete, at least by his own claim. I don't know if this is true. I've just heard the buzz. Is it, in fact, the case that Saquon can play some Connect Four?
You know, they put a Connect Four thing in our locker room, and, yeah, he took the storm. He took the Connect Four storm. I'll give him that, but they did put a ping pong table in the locker room, and I would tell you, I found something that Saquon is not good at. And it's ping pong.
Here's what we have to do then, Evan Ingram. One, you need to start shooting the surreptitiously to prove, you know, just in case you ever need it. I don't know that you need to show the video of Saquon being bad at ping pong right now, but you want to have it in your hip pocket. You know what I'm saying?
And he's gotten better. I wouldn't say he's horrible, but he cannot beat me. He will never beat me. So I will gladly post the next time I whip his butt in ping pong and broadcast it to the world.
Maybe you could do a little like decathlon among the Giants, non-football related activities.
We actually talked about, I think we're going to put together a nice big bracket throughout camp, a ping pong tournament.
Ooh.
And we're going to put a nice big bracket together. Everybody wants to play and whenever we have time between meetings or before or after practice and stuff. We're going to get some games in. We're going to see who truly is the number one guy in the locker room.
Okay.
We have a really good punter. The special team guys are always the best because they go out and kick, and they're done for the day, and they come in and do whatever they want. So the special teams guys are the guys that are at the top right now. But I think I have a good shot taking the crown.
I look forward to following it as a spectator. If I can submit, though, I wouldn't mind you expanding beyond that. Make it a little bit of an Olympics for the Giants. Do some free throw shooting or perhaps a one-on-one. I guess the coaching staff would come in and say, like, what are you guys playing one-on-one basketball for?
Yeah.
Maybe just a shooting contest of some sort. You know, we can create the events for you, but one of them should be Connect Four. How about this? Would you I'm going to ask a favor of you. What about if we got you and Saquon and you got it on video live? We would stream it live. We'll put it on FaceTime or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I will play from here in Studio 66 against Saquon in Connect Four, and you can officiate or you can broadcast. You'll do the play-by-play on the showdown, because I don't. I'm sure you've heard. You're an athlete, and athletes talk about other athletes. I have won 3 straight Connect Four titles back in the 90s. And wow. then I retired. It was before you were alive. But I won
so
3.
So you're legit. You're not just talking. You know.
Oh no, just, no. I wouldn't do that. Back to the no jive policy. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't jive you. I hear that there are other people like Beyonce and Kanye and who else? Rajon Rondo. These frauds need to be exposed. Mm-hmm. Now I retired some years ago, but I'm willing to consider a special event against number 26.
I think once if we can just broadcast that match and you take down Saquon, I think that will create a lot of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more other competitors will hear about it, and I think you'll be like the top dog that everybody just wants to take down, and then you'll have your own Connect Four challenge.
Well, listen, if we get endorsements out of it, all the better. But the point is, it's really ultimately a favor to you and your teammates, because Saquon is on the cusp of superstardom. I think he needs to be taken down a pegger, because if he gets a big head, then what? You don't want that.
Yeah,
what if he gets full of himself?
Yeah, we got to keep him humble. How about, I stream my beatdown ping pong, and then we stream mm-hmm. your beatdown on him and this Connect Four, and I think that would do the job.
He'll
be pretty humble.
Yeah, between you giving him the business and then I follow up with some Connect Four action, I think Saquon will be humbled but good, and then he'll realize, you know what, there are no off days. I got to keep on hustling. So anyway, exactly. In advance, the Giants fans can thank Evan Ingram and Dave Damashek. Hey, so also what we talked about before it got going there was just before was Game of Thrones final season. Yep. Go ahead. Tell me what you thought.
I'm kind of on the fence about it. I was excited for it. That was the first time I watched the show like weekly.
Mm-hmm.
So each week I was just excited, ready, like pumped up, amped up. And I would say the battle with the White Walkers, that was the elite episode. That was a great episode. I didn't know what was going to happen. Everybody just seemed down, and all of a sudden, what's her name?
I forget everybody's name 3 days after I watch any episode. What was her name?
Yeah.
Who killed, who got the White Walker? The Night King?
Yeah.
Arya. I forget Arya, their Arya, name. Arya. I don't know what it is. Yeah. I cannot remember anyone's name.
That was tight. That episode was tight. And then it was kind of – that next episode was a little down episode. And then when Khaleesi burned the city, that was crazy. But mm-hmm. all in all, I think the final season was kind of rushed. But I enjoyed it. Unlike a lot of other opinions, I enjoyed it. I wish the ending was a little bit better, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that's what ailed it, is that it just was too fast. They could have done like 6 or 10 more episodes and we would have been more satisfied by it. But the other bummer is Bran, when Tyrion goes like, who's had a more interesting story than Bran? Like, everybody up here. What do you mean who's had a more interesting story than Bran?
Yeah.
He just got dragged around all the year after year. Everybody else was out fighting. Arya took off her face and put on other people's faces and then went out and assassinated people. That's more interesting than anything Bran did.
Yeah, I think the throne obviously should have went to Jon. Either Jon or Arya, but Bran has the mind for it. So, I mean, it was just kind of thrown together to get done. The two action pack episodes I liked with the war and the burn in the city. But because a lot of people were upset with Khaleesi will burn the city. But you know what? I kind of hate to admit this, and I'm not – obviously it's a TV show, so it's not real. I was kind of pumped when she decided to burn the city. Because a lot of people don't remember – that those kids and all those people that were in that city were cheering when they chopped off my boy Ned's head at the very beginning of season one, at the end of season one. All those people were happy cheering, and I wanted to get some vengeance.
You know what? I have actually gotten away from it, I agree with you a little bit more, because also don't forget when they marched and she was mean too. But and they got burned and stuff. But they were mean spirited people because they all spit on Cersei when she got paraded nude through the town and everything else. Yep. They're not like they were all wholesome, wonderful people themselves.
Yeah, so obviously it's not real, but I was when she told the dragon to light it up, I was pumped up. I got amped up when that happened.
All right, then we'll let you go because your hours are ticking down before you go to your training camp, which you claim you're super excited to be going to. Now, listen, I'm assuming it's going to be a really intriguing. The NFC East is, I think, primarily because of the four major metropolises in which the four teams reside, is always compelling and gets an outsized bit of attention, I feel like. But in 2019, man, oh, man, the team nobody's even talking about is the Redskins. And if that kid goes up there, Dwayne Haskins, and is halfway decent, I think you really have like a four-team race. I know people are talking Eagles and Cowboys. You guys are kind of in a nice spot, though, because as far as I'm concerned, you guys feel, you know, if the QB spot works out and, you know, and Baker and Lawrence can contribute something defensively and firm that thing up a little bit, I think you guys are legit players in the division this year.
Yeah, it's obviously those teams are great. Each one of those teams are going to be a battle. But, you know, it's time for us to kind of get back at the top of our division. The past 2 years, we beat the Redskins last year. That was my first division win, being with the team. Because we beat the Redskins at the end of my rookie year, but I wasn't playing. So, but I think it's definitely time, and it's going to be some exciting matchups that we play the Eagles and Cowboys in prime time. Once this year, so I'm ready for those battles. It's gonna be a great battle within the division and for us our entire season.
Well, it's gonna be fun to watch, not just the quarterback spot, but to see what you guys do once things kick off in September. Last thing is back to uniforms real quick. What hat do you like better, when it says Giants in all block letters or when it's got the lowercase NY?
The Giants.
All right. Now, after all the goodwill of the last 15 minutes, now it ends on that sour note. I like the NY. It's a little cooler, but okay.
I like the Giants. It's a little different. I like a little different.
I can get behind the Giants. It sounds like the key detail is it's the gray pants. I don't understand I understand why if you're a Giants fan who watched LT and Phil Simms and all those guys, you like that look because it reminds you of that. But aesthetically, the gray pants, like you say, with the red numbers on the jersey, that's tough to beat in all the NFL.
Yeah, I think we have the top spot with our uniforms. A lot of fans are messing around with the red tops coming back.
No.
Make a whole bunch of edits and stuff. I like those, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No. Spaghetti says he does like those. No, that's wrong, Spaghetti. Please.
I love those back in the day.
The
Plaxico era teams. Yeah, it was the red jersey when they had the blue little piece in the collar. The white numbers was great.
No, I disagree with that. But listen, I agree with most everything else Evan Engram said here. Stay healthy, man. And at minimum, stay healthy for the ping pong tournament and get your broadcast pipes in order so you can call the showdown, the Connect Four showdown between me and 26 there. Let's see if we can line those things up. In the meantime, like I say, have a good last few weeks of free time and best of health going forward, man.
Dave, I appreciate you, man. It's always a pleasure.
Yep, the pleasure's all on this side of the glass here. Thanks, man.
I'll see you later.
Real quick detour here, football fans. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Boy, is that true. Whether it's a knee injury or a bad back, that's what I have. I get that real bad, sharp pain in my lower back, but I'll just let it linger for like 6 or 8 weeks and drag one of my feet behind me until I finally head into a doctor, and by then it's embarrassing. Either way, guys are usually more comfortable just rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor, and the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Definitely don't rub dirt on it for that as a resolution. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED from the comfort of your home and handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Just go to GetRoman.com/Damashek and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they'll prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free two-day shipping. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get it checked out. And with Roman, it's so easy. So just go to GetRoman.com/Damashek to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/Damashek for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/Damashek. Now back to football. Delightful. What do you think, Spaghetti? Can we make that ping pong tournament? That'd be fun.
I think so. I've talked to some people. I think it's going to happen, and I was glad to get him back in the studio, or at least call into the studio. And like we keep saying, the breakout star, but I think it really does. A lot of people I've seen lately say Sterling Shepard now because they have Golden Tate, but I think like the biggest difference is the offensive line giving the quarterback more time to throw, and the fact that Evan is so versatile, whether he could split out wide or stay in tight. And I think he's just an athletic guy that he could really be the same safety blanket, not only for if it's Eli or for the rookie quarterback.
What do you think it's going to be?
Game one?
Yeah.
I think it's Eli, game one.
To what end, though?
I don't know. I don't know. If you said week eight, I don't know. But week one, I think it's Eli.
I mean,
regardless of who the quarterback
I've said,
is, I think.
I've said it ad nauseum.
Evan will be fine.
I've said it ad nauseum. Well, that's fine. But do you want the Giants to do well? That's the greater concern. And I wonder, if you believe in the kid, what's to be gained at this point? What's to be gained if you don't? If Eli's out, if you're moving on from Eli, then move on from Eli.
I don't disagree with you. I think the one thing that the Maras and the Tishes and Dave Gettleman to an extent, and they all have this fear of if Eli is awful the first X amount of weeks, they don't want to see it end with him being pulled and then putting in Daniel Jones. They wanted to have a graceful exit. They wanted to have like a, you know, a Derek Jeter last season, kind of like do the whole farewell tour, and he has a pretty good season offensively, and then he gets to go home. They don't want to see Eli look awful and get crushed.
It just doesn't meet with reality, though.
He's not
apparently performing on that level, but it is interesting. I wonder if you could do that kind of a thing. Ingram was very nice in his answer to that question about talking about which QB is looking better. But if you liked one versus the other, you could just always drop the passes from the other. Like, you know, yeah, that ball was moving weird. Yeah, that guy's arm isn't right. You know,
yeah.
And then again, you're putting the stink on yourself.
I still think, not that he really tipped his hand either way, but I have a feeling just listening to his answers saying that I think they love Daniel Jones. I think just from
that did kind of come through. Right?
I think from what we've seen, from what beat writers have said, and I think from what some of the players have said, but like, you know, a couple of things he said, and it was that his arm is lively, and we've seen Daniel Jones make plays with his feet. We haven't seen a Giants quarterback make plays with their feet, and I couldn't tell you how long. The fact that he could run, I think the younger players like to inject some life in this team, and it looks like that Daniel Jones could extend plays, and he can maybe make the throws to the sidelines that Eli can no longer make. So I think they're excited for like the new era, especially because your offense is extremely young with Saquon, Sterling Shepard, Evan, a couple of pieces in the O-line are young. So I think they do want the fresh blood in there.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, it does sound like, well, I mean, but listen, I can't believe I almost just bought, I think that Evan Ingram means what he says, but I almost just bought some of that offseason, like this kid, hey, look out, everybody. You know, you can, we always talk about, it's easy in the summertime to talk yourself into a football team.
Sure.
It's much easier to do that than talk yourself out of that football team. Hey, you know, with all the big stuff going on in New York City with bad news for the Knicks and good news for your blue shirt, you're excited about what happened with the blue shirts, right?
Oh, yeah. They're going to be great. I'm so excited.
Going to be great?
I think the Rangers went from being a mediocre bottom half team to all of a sudden being actual cup contenders in the East. I swear, I really think they're that good.
Hmm.
The additions they made, Fox, Trouba, obviously signing Panarin and drafting Capocaygo, I think is the best part in this draft. They actually give Hank another shot at winning
Hank.
A cup.
Do we know for sure if it's Capocaygo or Capocaygo?
I heard it both ways.
I don't know which one I prefer.
Whatever Sam Rosen says, I'll just go with.
Capocaygo.
It's
Caco, Caco, Caco. Keiko. Well, I'm trying to figure out which I like better. Either way, he may turn into a star. Something I've been doing on social media, Spaghetti, and I feel like I'm one of the few people who's become as obsessed by it. By my own little task here, but some people have chimed in here, and I wanted to kibitz with you and get your thoughts about it and bring it up. And if you want to look it up, I'll tweet it back out here at Damashek. It occurs to me, or it occurred to me a couple weeks ago when the Lakers landed Anthony Davis, that they have a run at center that is perhaps the greatest for one franchise. Lakers center might be the greatest single position for one team in at least North America. I don't know what goes on in the Premier League or otherwise. Enough to weigh in on that. But Lakers have had George Mikan, Wilt. They had Kareem. They had Vlade, who was not half bad. He's not a Hall of Famer, but he still was pretty good. Shaq Fu, Gasol played some center later in his time with the Lakers. And now Anthony Davis, and you also had a mediocre to bad season from Dwight Howard. I don't know if you count that one. Is that the best? But you also have Packers QBs. The other ones in contention, I would say, are Packers QBs, Dodgers starting pitchers, Montreal Canadiens goaltenders. I think that one of the more iconic ones is Red Sox left fielders, and deservedly so. They go Ted Williams, Hall of Famer, obviously, best hitter that ever lived. Then Yaz, the epic lengthy career, all in the Boston colors. Then Jim Rice, also a Hall of Famer. Then Gator Greenwell, who was very good, just fell off and didn't have the sustained greatness. But then Manny Ramirez is there. He's out in left field making all the big hits along with Big Poppy in getting that first World Series. And now Andrew Benintendi. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't like that.
Unfortunately for me to say, but it is good. I do agree. They are very, very good. I think if Benintendi has a phenomenal career, that helps them out a lot. I think they're kind of relying on him. But yeah, it's a strong case.
And then you have, Icon is great, but is it as great as once you put the names together? Bears middle linebacker. Bill George is, in the history of football and in the structure of the game, he is significant as a middle linebacker playing that spot there. But, who among us has seen him play? No disrespect, but nevertheless. Then you go Dick Butkus, Mike Singletary, Brian Urlacher. That's a pretty good run of Hall of Famers there. I don't know that it ultimately meets. I know the names. They're iconic names, but is that as good practically? Now, right behind that, I would submit Bears running backs. If you look at from Red Grange to Bronco Nagurski, then you get Gale Sayers' sweetness. Neil Anderson was great. Matt Forte was great.
Yeah, super underrated.
And Jordan Howard was great until obviously limited, or else they wouldn't have dealt him away. I think that's a pretty good one that needs to be in the conversation, as does Rams running back Lawrence McCutcheon before your time, but he was really good. History has forgotten this guy, Lawrence McCutcheon, but in the 70s, he was a great running back for some really good Rams teams. Then you go Eric Dickerson, Marshall Faulk, Jerome Bettis. Jerome Bettis only the two seasons, but he still was really good in those two seasons. Steven Jackson is a great numbers guy, not much of a winner, but I don't know how much you hang that on him in the St. Louis years. And then Todd Gurley's been dynamite since he got to L.A. I think that's a good position. But I think if you look at it, Spaghetti, it comes down to this. I want to give you my win play show.
Okay.
And tell me where I'm wrong.
Sure.
Packers QB, they go Bart Starr. They go Lynn Dickey, who was fine, had put up some, if nothing else, put up some huge numbers back in the 80s and on some halfway decent teams. Then the magic man, Don Majkowski. Okay, underwhelmed perhaps, but they were both pretty good. They were both upper half of quarterbacks in their eras. But then you go Brett Favre, and then you go Aaron Rodgers. That's pretty crazy. I mean, Aaron Rodgers will be remembered as one of, what, the five best quarterbacks of the Super Bowl era, I would think, at worst. Brett Favre is also probably right around that group. And the great Bart Starr, 15-1 in the postseason, first two Super Bowls, so on and so forth. That's a pretty dynamic trio there.
But I'm looking at the – I think – see, what Packers have is that they've all won, and Rodgers has won, because the next –
highest ranked QB list is the Colts. If Luck wins one, or let's say Luck wins two, they match up really well versus the Packers because you have Unitas versus Star. Does Unitas win that? You have Peyton versus Favre. Peyton probably wins that. And say if Luck wins multiple, he might overtake Rodgers because he's as talented as they come as well. That's the one that could go from being in the teens to all of a sudden being top three.
That's a great point you make, a great hypothetical. If Andrew Luck gets over the hump, I mean, he was declared, as we talk about, a Hall of Famer before he even put on an NFL uniform. People fell in love with him back in Stanford and hyped him so much. If that pays off, do all those people in the name of self-validation boost Andrew Luck then and say, look at what he's done? And it is a great story. I mean, his career was in jeopardy 12 months ago. We didn't know what he was going to end up being. And then he has that season. That team, by the way, at the end of it, don't you have to kind of look at that team and say that's the Super Bowl favorite out of the AFC? What's wrong with that team? What's not to like about that team?
I don't know why I have it in my head. I hope they could win on the road, but they probably will be too good to not play on the road. They'll probably have a home field. I mean, yeah, they're in the conversation. I think the Chargers are really good.
I agree with that, but I think the defense for the Colts, think about how good the defense was, and it got better now in the offseason.
My only thing against them would just be I think their division is pretty good because they have the Titans, who are kind of playoff team. You have the Jaguars, I think, will rebound now with Foles, and their defense is still strong. And then obviously the Texans, I think their own division could beat up on them pretty good. They don't have any like lame ducks in their division, which is the one thing that could hurt their, I guess, wins loss record, which could affect obviously where they play in the postseason. But no, I think their roster, they finally have a defense, so their roster is great.
Back to this list then. Here's what I hear you on the Colts. That is an interesting point that could shake that up. I think, and people will call me crazy, or call me a homer or whatever. Do you think it's fair to say that the Pittsburgh Penguins center iceman is the greatest single position in
it's very
American
good.
Sports
yeah,
history?
Looking at it, there's a lot of depth to it, too. A lot of like quality depth. Like some of these other positions have some depth that aren't great. The Lakers are really the only other one that can match up with the depth.
Lemieux's at worst the second best center iceman in sure. NHL history. Ronnie Francis is a top 20 center iceman in NHL history. Brian Trotche, not there long, but does win two Stanley Cups there for what that's worth. Alex Kovalev, his best years are spent in black and gold. Marty Straka, a very nice high-end offensive player. Then you get Sidney Crosby, who now is one of the five best players. And I mean, based on that, you have 66 and Sidney Crosby, two of the top five in the history of the game,
sure,
regardless of position. Geno Malkin, a generational great, and even Jordan Staal won a couple Stanley Cups with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, this is a tough one just because it's still ongoing. Like if Crosby and Malkin get one more, that helps them out a ton. But at the same time, with the Lakers centers, if Davis goes on a stretch here with the Lakers, LeBron,
if they start winning titles,
and then all of a sudden that becomes dominant, that could be a very interesting. Those are easily the top two, just because of the depth.
I want you to know, listener, this is not set in stone yet. Drop me a line. These are your final moments to do so. Otherwise, this gets it etched into history, and then there is no changing it until there are updates like Andrew Luck winning the Super Bowl or something like that. All right, that's it, Spaghetti. I think we've done more than enough. Evan Ingram, delightful as usual. We have to get to work on our Connect Four tournament. I may even have to start doing some workouts if, in fact, it comes to that with Saquon. I might have to start getting mentally and spiritually
right. We should do that. We should do your comeback from retirement. There's a lot of places around where we live that have those giant Connect Four boards that you can play.
I like those, but that's a gimmick. And that
warps
my eye.
You got to do it in public to feel the crowd.
No. Maybe. I'm open to it, but I'd like to do it right here in Studio 66. And then have him hooked up across the country and be in his comfy spot so there are no excuses to be made.
Without practice? Oh, you are going to practice?
No, I don't know. That ain't right. That would be against the spirit of it for me to do that. We'll think it over. We'll try and figure it out, and we'll talk with Saquon's people. There is a shaming potentially to be dealt to 26, and he might not be right then for football. You know, so anyway, a lot to consider. But anywho, we'll be back later on with more Hooey and Applesauce for you. In the meantime, for Evan Ingram, for Eddie Spaghetti, and I don't know, anyone you want to thank there, Spaghetti?
I want to thank John Davidson and the Rangers organization for making this a phenomenal franchise.
For making MSG still periodically the worthwhile Mecca. To pay a visit to.
Exactly.
All right, we'll talk with you later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.